we feeling today? Happy yeah. Frozen 2 Day! Oh, come on. Happy Frozen 2 Day! That's what I'm talking about. I like that energy. Good morning. Okay, today promises to be as special as this film. I'd like to bring out the brilliant minds behind this wonderful, extraordinary experience. First up, we have Peter Delvecchio, producer. Come join this enthusiastic crowd that's so excited to be here. Jennifer Lee, director, officer of Walt Disney Animation. I see her strut to the stage. That's a woman who knows she's got a great film on her hand. Chris Buck, director. A woman who needs no introduction, but Kristen Bell. Is back and better than ever. Idina Menzel. And our lovely Josh Gad, please come to the stage. Jonathan Groff. Evan Rachel Wood. Kristen Anderson Lopez and Bobby Lopez. They were in a little song a few years ago, you may have heard of. It's a little number, it's kind of popular. Thank you all so much for being here. I know I speak for everyone in the room when I say that we are thrilled. Frozen 2 is back. I've seen it. I loved it. I can't wait to see it again. I've been living on bragging rights for the better part of 48 hours, so I've managed to work in the fact that I've seen Frozen 2 into every conversation that I've had, so thank you all very much for being here. Before we start with the questions, I'd like each of you to give me one word to describe Frozen 2. Just one word. Peter, we'll start with you.
Perseverance.
That's a good one.
Change.
Ooh. Courage.
Change.
Courage.
Sexy. Yeah. Actually.
Adventure.
I was gonna change mine, but
no. No, I think that okay, because it's not adventure. It's I was just gonna say soulful.
Residuals. Also, growth. Epic.
Yes. Yeah. Calking. Resilience.
Jonathan took mine.
What was Jonathan?
Epic. Music.
So Elsa, Anna, Kristoff, Olaf, and Sven set out on a journey beyond Arendelle into a world where they search for answers about Elsa's past, her magic powers, who she is, and the backstory of her family and Anna's family. Talk to us about the journey towards making Frozen 2. I understand that there were trips abroad for inspiration, there was a number of conversations about the direction that you wanted to take this in, lots of back and forth about how you can make something that honors the original but takes it in a new direction, a compelling direction. Walk me through that journey.
Wow, yeah, we'll share. I think it really started about a year after the film came out. We did a small short, and when we saw the characters animated again, we got emotional and we said we missed them. And then Peter had been traveling, meeting with artists around the world, and this one question kept coming up, which was, why does Elsa have powers? Mm-hmm. And then more questions, what are the girls meant to do with their lives? They're on the precipice, they finally got together, what happened, where were their parents really going? And it just kept rolling, and we realized we had been talking, we had those questions, and we naively just said, we have more story to tell, and we're not ready to leave this world. We love this world. Not knowing what the journey would be, a journey Disney Animation doesn't usually do. There's never been a second musical to a feature film. So we were going into the unknown completely. We just knew that we loved them and we'd be with them again, and we couldn't wait to find out what was going to happen to them. So that's the beginning.
Yes, and we got lost in the woods along the way. And everything is about to make sense now that I'm older. And let's see, if I just do the next right thing, somehow all will be found. Okay, yay, almost. Did I miss one? No, I'm just showing myself.
You know, one of the many things that I loved about the original is that it functions on many different levels. And this film does the exact same thing and more. I mean, in less than 2 hours, Frozen 2 tackles everything from environmentalism and our symbiotic relationship with nature to colonization, the dismantling of the patriarchy, reparations, the importance of self-discovery. And then it
does.
Yes! Because I told you earlier, I'm working on the New Yorker think piece. So. But in addition to all of that, it happens to be a love story about two extraordinary sisters. Kristen and Dina, talk to me about what it was like to return to these characters, these two women who've not only inspired an entire generation, but touched so many people.
Well, there's the macro and the micro, I think. It's returning to this family and this beautiful film and this project that's gifted us with so much joy in our lives, and connecting with another human being like this Kristen and this sister, and making beautiful art, something that we're proud of. And then there's taking that out into the world, and it, from my perspective, getting to go out on the stage, it just never really ended from Frozen 1 to 2, because I'm singing the music from it all the time, all over the world, and looking out into an audience and seeing people of all ages, really, singing this music and reminding me how they've been touched by it and how they've learned to celebrate that thing inside them that makes them feel extraordinary in the world.
And I think that it definitely never really ended. And I'm very similar to Anna. I tried to infuse like a ton of me into this character, maybe more so than I've ever done. And similarly, since even though we're roughly the same age, since my early 20s, I have been living for Idina. You know what she was.
Smooth. That was
is, I mean, amen. She was obviously on Broadway very young and just like blew up. And I remember I was studying in New York and watching her on stage and just going like, what? She's my idol. And then it was a very cool beginning to, cool and terrifying to be told by Disney. So, you know, maybe go to Adina's house before this table read, prepare a song just so we can hear what you guys sound like together. And I was like, okay. And then I drove to her house, stood by a piano, was terrified. My palms were sweating. And it was almost immediate, this like genuine sisterly bond. Because I remember she just put her hands on my shoulder. She's like, you sound so beautiful. This is going to be great. And I was like, just melted.
Wait, what song did you prepare? I'm curious.
It was Kristen's idea to do a duet of Wind Beneath My Wings.
Do it now.
Because the music wasn't written yet. They sang it in harmony at the first read through.
Yeah.
Bobby
this
and
is
I,
happening now. You guys do it.
Please don't tease us.
Do it.
Nice and cold in my shadow. It's a little early. I'm done. Yeah. Never have some light on your face.
Because I was there, I wasn't on the film yet. There was no script. There was a script. It was like a loose script. I forget the ones before. I was like, no. But the whole thing was greenlit. It moved up a year based on the two of them singing together.
Boardroom. You know, like a tight little boardroom, sitting at a desk, just looking at each other, going, "This is the weirdest thing we've ever done." As a testament to Bobby and Kristen, because at that time, I'm probably getting off tangent a little bit, but
this is exactly where I want to be right now.
Yes!
but Elsa was written more as kind of your quintessential Disney nemesis, and it was these guys that wrote this complicated, beautiful, passionate song called Let It Go that then I think, if I can speak for you guys, informed you that there was a complicated young woman here and that we didn't have to sort of stereotype her into, or paint her into a corner.
And Kristen and Bobby, I want you to jump in on that because you've seen, oh, I'm sorry. Kristen was reaching for the mic, and I knew you had something important to say about helping shift the direction of Rosen.
The first thing I was going to say is the irony of the fact that it was greenlit based on these two women singing together, and they only actually sing together in the films for about 2 minutes when they're yelling at each other. There is, am I allowed to announce it? Okay. Never mind. Nothing happened. Erase. I do have to say that I need history to be correct. There would be no complicated villain turned into Elsa Let It Go song if we had not had Jennifer Lee and Chris Buck in the story room sort of inspiring us, and we were talking so deeply in a way I had never really talked about songs and characters before. And that's what really, it was the story of these, of the emotion between these two sisters that Jennifer specifically had been talking about her own sisters. It brought, everyone was talking about their own sisters, and that's what really made us think, you know what? I think Elsa's not a villain. I think we need to go deeper than that. So Let It Go isn't just like, in a vacuum, Bobby and I wrote Let It Go. It was really all about story and character that was inspired by Jennifer Lee and Chris Bach and the story team, making us think about a more complicated, more layered sisterhood story.
Did you have any idea that that song would be a global juggernaut, one that would be viewed more than 2 billion times alone on YouTube? Billion, by the way.
No, I had no concept of that.
By the way, this couple has a few EGOTs between them. You don't know what that means. That's it. And a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony. Okay, just drop the EGOT bomb on him a little bit. I don't know. Okay.
He has two.
Oh, woo!
I can say that because I'm his wife and I'm very proud of him.
My greatest hope for Let It Go after we had finished it was that Maria Menounos would introduce it in that movies with Maria Menounos. You just sort of let it go.
Wow. Did slightly better than that. Josh, I want to get to you. Last we saw each other, you were proposing to Idina Menzel on the red carpet. Yes?
It's none of your business, John.
Well,
yes, I did. I was there. I like Kristen, I also, we're roughly the same age. She's roughly older than me, but I remember seeing you in Rent when I was in high school and fell madly in love, which is like, who is this? She's incredible. And then in college, saw her in Wicked, and was like, this girl is one of the most talented human beings alive. Woo. I was obsessed with her. And was like, I'm either going to marry her or do an animated franchise.
And you tried to have both the other night.
It didn't work out. I would say she goes for a different type.
She doesn't like snowmen.
The idea that I get to come to work, and I said this the other day, but like the coolest part about watching Frozen and now Frozen 2 with my daughters is they have these guys as their role models. That is just the most incredible part of this journey. Is like I get to share this with two girls who get to look up to two fiercely independent Disney princesses who I think are changing the way we view what a princess is. And I love that. And that to me is the greatest part of this journey, is that it has a personal touch to it.
I want to talk about Olaf's evolution. He can read now, he's got a permafrost, and he's living his best life.
He got a license, he took out an insurance policy. So he's done a lot of growth. We talked we talked early on. Do you remember this? I was thinking about the story that I shared with you guys right around the time that we were going into production about Ava. She was about 5 years old. And she, my oldest child, one day was sitting at the table and she was laughing and all of a sudden tears started streaming down her face. And she looked at me and my wife and she goes, "What if I don't want to grow up?" And she started crying. And it was really, it was so unbelievable because I think we all have had that experience as kids, but it's so traumatic you just forget about it.
I still have those moments
as a kid. Yeah, right, I know. But that is the way I feel about Olaf in this movie is, in the first movie, he was this innocent ball of naivete who was willing to basically go out into the summer sun because he didn't know any better and embrace it. And in this movie, he's almost gone from like toddler to fully grown child, where now he's starting to ask those questions that don't always have easy answers. And both from a comedic perspective, it gave me so much to play with, but more importantly, from an emotional arc, it was just such a beautiful journey of, you know, that moment in life when you start to realize that maybe the world isn't just raindrops and lollipops and roses, whatever that lyric is, you know, but it's, it, that is such a beautiful thing to play.
Kristen, you had one minor criticism about the original, and that it was that Jonathan didn't get to sing enough.
That was baloney, and I'm glad you're bringing it up. you guys.
Who knew he was talented? There's this young kid named Jonathan Groff, came out of nowhere.
And that was my one criticism of the first one. I was like, look, it's an excellent film, but Jonathan Groff doesn't sing, so that's how it fails. But this time, everybody knew what to do. And Jonathan has, dare I say, I mean, it's very difficult to describe and I don't want to blow it, but it is one of the best, it's one of the top three moments of the film.
Jonathan,
let's
say,
speak to that.
I think it's the funniest song in Disney animation history.
Yeah. But we were trying to go for a tragic.
It's a tragic comedy of a song.
You were completely genuine when we were making that song. There was nothing funny about it at all. And then the animators did some crazy tape.
We had candles in the studio. We were like, Jonathan, just find it. Breathe in, breathe out. Think back to all of the heartbreak you've been through.
I was wearing that long wig. And there was like, it was really powerful.
Jonathan, the power ballad of all power ballads. Talk to me about walking into the booth and just going for it.
Well, it was such a an amazing experience. Bobby and Kristen had said to me at the beginning, and as well as Jen and Chris, you know, we want Kristoff to have a song. And I thought, like, that's so sweet of them to say, but how does a mountain man break it a song? I'd so much rather hear like Adina sing an 8 ballad.
But he's not just any mountain man. I likened him to secret deodorant strong enough for a man.
And also, Jonathan, talk about what your, I mean, because we've spoken about this before. We talk about female empowerment and it's led by two women, but I personally think that the representation that Jonathan gives for the guys is out of this world, and it's so subliminal, I don't even know if people will pick up on it, but do you remember those lines?
We were talking about yesterday. Sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
And then so
I mentioned this in my interviews.
Yeah.
These few lines that you say were everything.
There's one moment where...
Yes, what is the line? Which one? Because I have some too.
No, it's your moment.
There's one moment where Anna is in distress, and he swoops in and picks her up, and it's in the midst of battle, right? And he doesn't say, I've got you, and start taking over. He swoops her up and very quickly looks at her and he says, I'm here, what do you need? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's mind-blowing. And then the other one, when Anna apologizes to him for something, she says, I'm sorry, and he says,
My love is not fragile.
It's okay, my love is not fragile. It's just like the example of an egoless love like that. It's just, it's really profound, and I think people are going to be excited as to how the men are represented.
He's Prince Sincere, not Prince Charming.
That deserves two
good soundbite, and that is why she's Evan Rachel Wood. Just to add to it, when Magical Sven, I'm assuming you've seen the movie, when Magical Fantasy Sven says, you feel what you feel and your feelings are real. I think if that one message comes across to boys, that the boys get to feel empowered to feel their feelings in a big or small, but hopefully big 80s power ballad kind of thing. And we've done a little bit in the war against toxic masculinity.
Absolutely. Evan Rachel Wood, this is a long way away from Westworld. But
is it though?
We talked about it on the red carpet. You play a character who's all about self-discovery and self-determination and fighting to be who she is in her world, and there are definitely echoes of that in Frozen. Was that one of the reasons that you were drawn to this project, one? Two, and you're the newcomer to the family, so how did they haze you? Were you forced to hold like a tray of ice cubes until your fingers hypothermia? How did it work exactly?
Disney raised me. I grew up doing musical theater. And Disney musical theater go hand in hand, and all of my favorite Disney movies usually have the musical element in them, and those are the ones that I feel like really stick around forever, and all the ones that we remember and that we sing and become part of our lives, and to be a part, I mean, these are like the most talented people I've ever worked with in my life, even though I didn't actually get to be in the room with any of them. But just the artistry behind these films, they're just living, breathing works of art, and there's so much love and care poured into all of them. I've been singing Disney lullabies to my son since he was born, and so to be welcomed into the Disney family is already huge, and then to be a part of this already, just this phenomenon, and then to be given a Disney lullaby of my own was really... I'm still processing it. It's been such a special, like, beautiful experience, and I'm still giddy about it. I just can't believe I'm sitting here right now. I'm just happy to be here.
Well, we said something about Evan, because we were blessed where a lot of people auditioned, like incredible actresses and singers, and we weren't giving out any sets. We gave out a monologue, was it from Molly Sweeney, I think, to just hear, and then they sang. And Evan, not only was her singing voice extraordinary, and had this sweetness right between Kristen and Adina, so you could feel their mom was in the room. But also, what we love about this film is often moms aren't in Disney movies.
I know. Or they have a way of killing off the parents. Yeah.
Totally.
Cool. That's cool. As being a Disney princess is being a Disney mom that dies. So that's a really good property.
So that's the ultimate street cred, right?
No, I die early.
But you know, the mom. What I love is the effect mothers have on their children, whether they're there or not. But the incredible story that the mother has deep inside her that she hasn't shared and felt comfortable sharing, in her voice you could feel this nurturing, loving mother, but one who knew so much more. And how do you get that in a voice? It was just the sound of her voice. I knew she carried so much more than she was revealing. And that was just like, oh my God, we all looked at each other like, oh my God, she's here.
There's mist in your voice, and the song that we wrote for her also is sort of this misty, up at the top of the world, laying out the mystery, and it actually is the roadmap for the whole movie. And so she had to be this all-knowing, mystical goddess carrying that beginning of the...
And I actually listened to Kristen and Adina before I went into audition, hoping that I had elements of both of them. So the fact that you guys actually heard that made me feel so good about myself.
Just a few more questions before I open it up to the audience. Can we talk about Into the Unknown? Hearing Adina Menzel's voice just turn into a flock of doves in that song, and just soar. It's cathartic, it's emotional, it's empowering, it's anthemic. It is made for giant stadiums. When you wrapped yourself around that song, you must have just been in heaven. And also the pressure to follow up again, a cultural juggernaut, a global phenomenon like the song Let It Go. Can you three of you talk to me about that?
They can speak to the follow-up because I never feel that way. I don't know, well, you always talk about a little bit of pressure.
I always know my songs are gonna be hits, that's correct.
What I was going to say was, I feel like such
a... You give a guy a Thanksgiving Day float and this is the way he behaves.
I feel, I'm so trusting of the situation and this creative process, whether it be whatever we're doing, singing or doing dialogue, they so have our backs. They've gotten to know us as people and as singers, and so they make our lives easier, and they just something about how Kristen and Bobby can write such memorable, impactful melodies, but also tell story and involve your character through all of that is just, quite a gift. So I can just go in there and have fun. The only thing that I do is I warm up a lot because I know that they're gonna push me to hit tops of my range. And I, on a good day, I do, and I'm like, let's take it, let's go for some of these high notes. And then when I'm out in the middle of like Amsterdam on a tour and I have a cold, I just wanna like, go home. I don't know. I have to take it down and I keep. And sometimes it's just, I just pick, it's just, they're really challenging songs.
You can do that in Amsterdam, that's fine.
Amsterdam, they won't notice. They really won't. I feel ya, because yesterday I had to sing it 112 times every 5 minutes, and by 4 p.m. I had given myself mono, and I slept for 11 hours. So I apologize, except here's the thing. Adina, if you're given a Stradivarius, you write to a Stradivarius. Mm-hmm. And so Adina's voice, again, I'm also older than you guys, but I got to dance around to Rent in my apartment and even audition for Maureen a couple times when I was a mediocre actress and got typed out very quickly. But she auditioned for Maureen once too. So I knew
it. We're coming clean, so now.
I knew it in his voice, and one of the things that's so amazing is when she goes, like, every inch of me is trembling. Like, can you do it? Do it. Just, will you do it? Every inch of me is trembling.
Every inch of me is trembling. The line of my goal.
So, okay, you hear. It feels like a warm hug coming. It's so full of warmth.
Another song.
I know, but you could do it with, like, I can hear you, but I won't. She has this warmth and this vulnerability down low. And then as you bring her higher and higher, she gets stronger and stronger and more powerful. So she just reaches into your soul when she's singing these big, giant songs. And I really, truly think that we are the lucky ones to get to write for her. I don't know that Let It Go or Into the Unknown would be a hit without Adina, honestly. Yeah. It's she's our muse. And she's the one that inspires us to write these songs for this instrument.
Yeah, and we never think about hits or anything like that. And the reason for that is because Jen and Chris and Peter, when they first began this project, didn't think about trying to top the first one. They just thought about the characters. They just thought about the story. They pitched us this bit of an idea that they had, and it just gave us the chills. And that's what we all fell in love with, this continuation of a story of characters that we all love. And every day we talked to them on the phone, and these moments came up for songs, and you know, we were thinking about story the whole time.
There's never a song without beautiful pages and a fascinating story that makes us go, oh my gosh, can we hang up the phone right now and please go write it, and we'll get it back to you in like a day or two. That's the best feeling, and you're never thinking about pressure or following up when you're so excited because their story has inspired you to go rush to the piano and figure out how to nail that story point.
Mm-hmm. But
Kristen, how do you want audiences to feel when, yes, Miss Bell, how do you want audiences to feel to feel when they leave Frozen 2?
Oh, wow. I want them to, there are a few times in life where you get this paradox of feelings. One of them, which is my very favorite, is the moment you wake up from a nap and you know you don't have to get up and you're still in dreamland, but you can just kind of stay there for a while, but you're awake. That's one of them. The other one is when you have the feeling that you are ultimately fulfilled because you're all the cups inside your body of these different types of love that we've explored, self-love, familial love, romantic love, they're all full, starting with self-love, let me just underline that. But you also feel like you are capable to go out in the world and accomplish things. And I would reduce it to not accomplish anything, because I don't want the feeling to seem unattainable, but that you can accomplish something. It's that feeling between purpose and fulfillment and drive. And I hope that when people leave, they feel fulfilled, but they also feel like stepping into their unknown might be exciting.
Fantastic. All right, audience. You guys have some questions? Oh, okay. Is there a mic? All right. There we go.
Thank you.
Let's get the party started.
Hi, love the film. My question is for our staff. Can you tell us a little bit about why it might be important for younger audiences to see that overcoming their fear with love is really important? Like, I'm thinking about like when you're trying to propose and it doesn't go right. Can you kind of talk about that?
Yeah, someone made the point yesterday actually that oftentimes it's girls that are singing about pining after a man and the frustration of not being able to express it, or the man has left and now they're alone singing about it. And like the first Frozen and this Frozen, in many ways, it inverts that. And so here's a man pining after a woman, trying to come to terms with his emotions and sing about it. And I think that making the true love in the first film about familial love and making the center of the story these two sisters is part of what Frozen does. It just continues to kind of challenge your expectations of what the stories are. And I think for Kristoff, like Kristen said earlier, you feel what you feel and your feelings are real. So go for it.
Yeah.
Let down your hair and express yourself. And I dressed up as Mary Poppins. My mom allowed me when I was 3 to like go in full drag. And I had great parents in that way. But I hope that kids come and see this movie and like Kristen just said, have the opportunity to really feel like they can express themselves.
Thank you.
Next question. Okay, yes, you in the second row right there.
Thank you. Love the movie. So my question is kind of for everybody or whoever wants to answer. Why do you think this generation is so obsessed with origin stories and like finding the background behind characters we already love?
That's a good question.
That's a good one. Evan, you got this? Or Kristen, you got it?
Well, I was gonna make a point. One of the things I love about this film so much is that it puts this sort of like very complex idea in front of kids in a totally simple way, which is, hey, have you ever thought about the fact that maybe like past generations didn't behave that great? That they could have done it better? And that's called learning from the past. That's called evolving. And the idea that like, yeah, reading a history book, go ahead and change some things. That idea, and I think that this generation, because of our social connectivity and this online community that is the internet, we are able to talk about things, feel our feelings, and collectively decide that evolving is a pretty cool thing. And so I think that in order to evolve, you have to learn from history. And I think in order to learn from history, you have to know it. So I think that that subliminal current of wanting to know origin stories comes from wanting a betterment for humanity by learning from the past.
Right here in the corner, is there a, oh, right here. If you can come up front, yeah, scoot on over. There we go.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Josh. Olaf is a scene stealer. I just have to say that. That was the first thing I tweeted.
I'll take this one, guys.
that was the first thing I tweeted after seeing the premiere. And my kids are just going to love him even more than they already do. He has the best lines. Absolutely best lines.
That was a great question.
My question is actually for Kristen.
And we watch Olaf melt.
Okay, Kristen, the ending is very pivotal for your character. What was your initial reaction when you first heard of the fate of Anna?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you guys have seen it. Yeah. Has everybody seen it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Everyone in the, raise your hand if you've seen it. Nobody's down.
The other one.
Has anyone not seen it? Oh, okay. I mean, I literally get, I'm sweating because it's a big company.
She becomes queen.
We're witnesses. We will blame it.
You know, yes, it was very pivotal, and I remember the, you know, the moment that I found out and that scene was written, and I couldn't believe it, and yet it felt exactly right, and the reason and the way that it felt right was so perfect because. If we had written it where Anna wanted to be queen, it would not have worked. That's not Anna. Because Anna, the whole movie, is working on her codependency. She doesn't know what to do when she's alone. And I know that feeling very well. It's real easy to live for other people. And then when you're alone in a house, you're like, what do I do? Like, literally, what do I do? But the fact that they wrote it as Elsa's idea was this beautiful gift that was just matched Anna's belief and drive in saying, Elsa, your ideas are crazy and weird, and also I'm gonna stand right next to you while you try to accomplish them. This ultimate belief in people, and also this like slightly maternal thing that older sisters have, the way that it was written when there's the moment right before that scene when Elsa says like, and making it right, and I know exactly how to do that, or I know what to do. It just filled me with so much joy because of course it's what you do to a codependent person when you have to encourage them, you know?
There is also something, the moment for big sister, little sister, where your big sister sees you as the whole person and the potential, that the little sister has risen up to a place of like, I see your power. Anna's a leader, and she's the best kind of leader because of how nurturing and giving. She's the one who lifts people up, and that's the best kind of leader. And it's been in, I mean, Kristen brought that to Anna. It's been in Anna from the very beginning. She just didn't know it. She was growing and learning.
Oh my God, Jennifer, do not make me cry. Okay, I see, yes, the break here. Okay, there we go. Hi.
Oh, hi, sorry, I'm a little elated, maybe gassy, somewhere.
That's good.
My question is about the marketing of the movie. When I first saw the teaser trailers from the trailers, was I excited? Yes. But when I saw it, they came across as a little dark. And I have two young girls that love Frozen. They sing it all the time. And I'm a little concerned it might be a little too dark for them. Did you do that on purpose? Is it for the older kids? from the ones that originally called Frozen.
Peter, do you want to take that?
Okay. I think it was important to us to remind people of the scope and scale of the first movie that they perhaps had forgotten. This is a movie that had, the first movie had a lot of action in it, had a lot of emotion and drama, and I thought it was important to, I think we all thought it was important to very quickly reestablish that, and that this was a movie for everyone.
But I think you'll see, as having seen it, you know, we have seen it with very young audiences, and sometimes we forget, you go back to old traditional fairy tales, they always have a moment that gets a little scary. And little moments, and that's part of what fairy tales are for. They're so that you as a child and as a person in your life can experience things and go, oh, and you're safely in the seat, and then it helps you cope with life, and I think those are really important. And kids reach up. So I think, you know, we didn't go into the characters being full of fear and violence in that way. We went to those things in you that are evocative, they're mythic, they're fairy tale. And you know, Pinocchio and Bambi and Dumbo, like, this is part of fairy tale land, and I think, but what we've had incredible response of kids going through those moments and just coming out the other side with the triumph. And I think for us, we grew up in those fairy tales, and we didn't want to be afraid of it.
And can I also just say, I have two little girls too, and I know exactly the feeling that you're talking about. And the more I thought about it, and then having shown it to them a few weeks ago, I really think that we're always asked, why do you think the first one hit? I think my conclusion is we don't give kids enough credit because they're projections of us and we want them to be happy and because we want ourselves to be happy all the time. We don't give them enough credit for their ability to digest complex situations and trauma and struggle. And I think that's why the first one hit, because this character identified in kids, what do you do when you feel like two different things, when you feel shy and vulnerable and incredibly powerful. And I think in this second one, it's actually, that's the power of story. You don't have to tell them that the world is a scary place, even though it really is, but you can let them see a story that has a resolution. And it's kind of like, you know, why toddlers have tantrums, the things I've read that says like, oh, they're trying on all these emotions that don't yet fit because they're practicing. It's the same reason puppies play fight. They want to feel adrenaline and cortisol so they know how to handle it when they're older. So I actually think that it's great for kids to be a little bit on the edge of their seat because it's a safe environment to try on those emotions.
Mm. Okay, they're telling me that I only have time for one question. Okay, the woman waving her hand right there, okay. One waving back and forth, yeah. Make it a good one.
All right, well, thank you so much. I've never been this happy for an hour and a half. So I want to ask about the 80s ballet, Christoph's ballet. Yeah. It was hilarious. Oh my God. So how did it come about? Was it always intended to be this 80s ballet and the way the animated, obviously there's some Journey meets Queen in there. That's the feeling that I got. So how did it, you know, did it start out one way and then end up another way as far as the animation versus
You know,
the
it's so funny because we work so closely with Jen and Chris and Peter that I can't even, I couldn't even pinpoint whose idea it was.
They're all middle
aged. I definitely remember breaking up with my eighth grade boyfriend and just listening to Bryan Adams' Heaven over and over again. why would I do that? You want to wallow, you want to feel it.
Oh,
Sergio
God.
Is gay and lives in Amsterdam now. I'm sure he's seen Adina.
the competing idea that lost by a landslide.
Yeah, Bobby, jump in there real quick.
I just remember we had it down to two ideas and the 80s one, but the other one was like, maybe we could give him sort of like a Snow White kind of I'm wishing song.
But the truth is, Bobby and I adore 80s music. The melodies and the chord shifts are really complex. And most importantly, we struggle with many projects that men being able to sing an I Want song is very, very hard. Unless they are orphans, new to the country,
saying, like, I'm not giving away my shot. It's very hard to have a man sit down and go, like, here's who I am, here's what I want. I mean, and we deal with this all the time, and so
It ties in with why kids get bullied. It's very sad.
It is very sad. So in order to thread the needle of allowing us to, at the moment, it needed to be a fun moment where we've been in the woods, we've learned some really heavy things. We've just seen terribly scary earth giants go by. We needed to have a moment of fun, but we also didn't want to lose the tether to real emotion and real problems of transformation that are happening in the woods. So what is the best way to have some fun? In the same way that when we sing any song, about like the glory of love, we're doing karaoke, like, yes, we're having fun, but yes, we might actually be feeling like, I am a man who wants to be a boy.
Shall we all sing it together?
I'll be the hero you're dreaming of. We live together. That's a harmony.
Is incredible, but we could not do any of this without the animation team.
Yeah.
That is truly one of the most incredible groups working on any movie I have ever been a part of.
And just to give you some quick numbers, 75 animators worked on this, all from the original team. More than 130,000 frames for this project. So, shout out to the animators.
And they're happy, and we can tell because often when I watch a previs, they throw some jokes in there. They really tricky, because let me tell you something, the first time I was shown the next right thing, I didn't make the cliff jump. And they had one of me singing into the and messing up my note really bad in the studio, and I have an expletive that's not Disney.
I doubt they're gonna let you print this, but the first thing they showed me, can I say this?
Yes.
The one with Peter. The first thing that they showed me was something I said in the booth, because Peter was like making like, this is the way Peter watches me when I record, and I'm making like a really funny line. He's like, so I said, so the first bit they ever showed me was Olaf going, oh really? Oh fuck you, Peter.
$100 million in a weekend. To know that people are salivating over the sequel in this way must already be so incredibly rewarding. I mean, I know it's gauche to talk about numbers and box office, but that's a big deal. That must be incredibly validating.
I think what's amazing is we will forever ask ourselves why people embrace the film. We'll always be trying to figure it out. And the fact that they do want to go on another journey with these sisters, with this family, it means everything to us. We are so excited about where we're taking them. I don't think we knew where they were going, and they showed us that they have far more in them than we knew. And
We did know from, first off, I love this. I stayed out of the way most of the time. I just wind them up and let them go. That's my job. I'm a safety man. So, I just want to say, we knew from the beginning our ending. And we knew that just looking at the characters, really understanding the characters, and loving the characters, we knew that Anna should be queen. Anna should be the leader. She's a natural born leader. And that Elsa should be free. And we finally felt that with this one, we love that. And we love the last image. of Elsa and the happiness on her face at the very end mm-hmm. of the phrase. So that having the ending at the very beginning
that
really,
shot was
really
always
helped
there.
Us.
That shot went through every iteration that moment.
Yeah. So that kept us the whole way through. And then the whole thing about, you know, how much it's gonna do at box office. It's not that for us. I mean, it's the stories and we all get them. We all get the stories of how much the film has done for people. And we've been floored by the response, and we're just starting to do more press right now. And people that come to us and say that the movie brought their family back together, that it's changed their lives. There are a lot of art students are now getting into the art because of Frozen. But the ones that we hear a lot are people who have been going through a tough time, and people who say, I was ready to commit suicide. And I saw this movie, I saw the first one, and I saw Elsa, and I saw her journey, and I saw your characters, and I am still here because of this movie and because of you guys. So for us, it's very, very powerful. And money, whatever, you know, it's all about touching people and touching the audience.
A round of applause for Frozen 2.